Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Cloud Masters. We're joined today by Alfred Tommy. He's a GKE specialist here at Duit, and he is here to report back from KubeCon. Was it KubeCon EMEA or KubeCon EU?
I'm not sure. I was in Paris, so I'm guessing EMEA.
Yeah. Paris, yeah. So we wanted to, as fast as we could grab him after KubeCon, wanted to report on some of the key updates, at least the updates that he felt were some of the more important ones, and share with you why it's important, why you should care. So Alfred, take it away. I think the first one here is around Istio, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, it was a very interesting event. A lot of attendees, a lot of foot traffic at the booth itself. I tried to attend the sessions when I could. It was quite hectic, 3 days, and filled with a lot of new updates and events. Some of them were more interesting than the others. One of my areas of interest is generally around the space of service meshes. So it was really exciting getting to meet some people. I even got to see Louis Ryan. I hope I'm pronouncing his name right, but he's one of the co-creators of Istio. And now he's working at Solo.io. I think he transferred in from Google. He moved from Google. And he's also one of the people that I've been working on Istio's ambient mesh. Another person who did attend and who did give a speech was William Morgan. He is the CEO of Buoyant and creator of Linkerd. So Istio and Linkerd have always been, fighting at each other's heels, and they've always been the top two computers in the service mesh space. I would have loved to kind of have like a debate session between the two of them, just, going back and forth. They've done this already through their blogs, but would have been great to see it live.
What, do we need a debate or do we need an MMA fight? Like, get them like Zuckerberg and Musk, right?
It was a bit more mature version of Zuckerberg and Musk. So instead of the boxing ring, they were going back and forth on blog articles. I've been particularly interested in ambient mesh. It was released last year, I think around the same time as KubeCon last year, I think September 2022. I felt at that time it was quite a substantial change to the traditional data plane model, because when people think of service meshes, they think of, okay, you have your sidecar container, it's acting as a proxy, and that's enabling the entire mesh. Then Istio comes along and says that, what if we kind of strayed away from this sidecar model? Right? What if we, instead of having sidecar containers for every application that's part of the mesh, what if we have something like a daemon set, right? And that's what they did. They implemented a Rust-based Z-tunnel or zero trust tunnel, which runs as a daemon set on your Kubernetes cluster and enforces the network communications between services within that cluster. Funnily enough, this is not really a revolutionary idea as such. This is something that Linkerd has done in the past. In fact, prior to their current sidecar model, Linkerd also used to do host-based deployments for their service mesh. And I think that the experience of trying that and seeing the potential pros and cons of that approach, I think they made a calculated decision to revert to the sidecar model, because for some reason it wasn't working out well enough for them. And I've read the arguments on both sides, and I think they're fair. So for example, right, let me discuss some of the pros and cons of sidecar versus sidecarless. So with the sidecar less model, right, where you have your zero trust channel with Istio's ambient mesh, there are certain benefits you get. So firstly, every user who's ever used a service mesh, they're all aware about how resource hungry the system is, right? And there's a saying, I'm not sure about the statistical veracity of the statement, but it says something along the lines of a third of your resources are consumed by the mesh. And it might not be technically true, but it certainly feels like it's true, right? Because You see that at the end of the day when you get your billing report and you see your utilization specs, you can see, yeah, this mesh is quite resource intensive. Istio basically wanted to address that by saying that instead of having one sidecar container for every application, you could have like hundreds of applications in your cluster, right? So that's hundreds of sidecars. So instead of that, you could have a daemon set, which kind of runs a Z-tunnel and takes care of all of the applications or pods within a single node. It would be responsible for that. So that definitely does address the resource consumption issue of the sidecars. Another thing is performance, right? So what the ambient mesh tries to use is eBPF, which is extended Berkeley packet filtering. And this is a sidestep from the traditional routing method of using kubeproxies and IP tables, which generally go through quite a lot of hops to get to the desired location. With eBPF, it's basically executing programs at the kernel level, so you can actually enrich network communications with useful enrich packets with useful information that can kind of get the traffic to where it needs to be in a lot with a lot fewer hops because you have the additional context of the communication. There are drawbacks to this approach because if you're running anything at the kernel level, it's a little scary, right? And the kernel has its own verification process that it has to go through every time it executes something. So I think this is all going to be seen, right? Whether these pros and cons are going to be realized once we see this in production. While it was released in 2022 at the end of the year, the software is still in experimental stage, right? So it's not yet in production. We don't have large customers with running this with a lot of workloads that can testify to the feasibility of this in a production environment. So a little patience is required on our side until that happens. But I think the theoretical arguments are still valid, right? So there are definitely benefits that are going to be seen with the sidecarless model. In my personal opinion, I think the number one benefit is going to be cost savings, right? And I think that's something that every user is going to see. There have been a benchmark test done already with respect to performance. I think for the metric of QPS, we are seeing reductions with the ambient mesh model as compared to the sidecars. But in terms of latency, there wasn't any substantial difference, which I also take it as a good sign, right? If it's not a bad sign, it's a good sign. And the cost savings are definitely something that everyone should keep an eye out for. I think that's going to be the USP of the software, at least. Now, going to the other side of the argument, right? If I can talk about the other side of the coin, the arguments that William Morgan makes is essentially that, firstly, one is the argument along the lines of security, right? And I think Istio, Solo.io have also represented a security blog. They've posted a security blog where they've mentioned where they've tackled a lot of the issues addressed by the public community on that blog. I think it's basically a trade-off, right? So with the sidecar model, you're generally working at the layer 7, right? When you're talking about the ambient mesh and the Z-tunnel, that's the secure overlay. There we're talking about layer 4. Layer 4 is generally more secure, right? But it has, it's a trade-off between, it's a classic risk analysis, right? So you do a trade-off between the probability of the risk and the impact of the risk. So at the L7 layer, the probability is a lot higher, but the impact isn't, it's bad, but it's not that substantial. But when you consider issues at the L4 layer, while the risk is a lot lower, the impact is substantially worse. So it's a bit of a trade-off you have to make between those two sides. Another issue that William Morgan brings up is the noisy neighbor problem, right? So you have one deployment that's responsible for all of the applications within a specific node. So what happens when one application or pod is being particularly more noisy than the others, right? Is it fair for the other workloads within that node to have to deal with its noisy neighbor? So I think that's a valid argument. I think, again, it's good to theorize about all of these things, but I think we'll only know for sure once we see it live in a production environment.
It's a really interesting discussion because, I mean, and I can see both sides of this. A million years ago, I worked more on Windows systems and in particular Citrix stuff. And there was a huge shift when we went from NT4 into Windows 2000 because they moved two of the most critical parts of what we used to do. They moved it into user space and away from the kernel, which meant that you had a lot less kernel panics or blue screens in Windows because any problem was being caught in the user space and the app would still fail, but the server would stay up. So you didn't lose the most important thing, user sessions. Obviously, as we move into containerized workloads and hopefully customers out there are using much more stateless and not stateful containers, then you still have that possibility of losing session data, that sort of thing. But you're really pushing that balance between the kernel performance versus that security that leads to the stability, right? So if you've got it in user land and something happens, maybe not such a big issue. But if anything goes wrong in kernel land, then you're talking about panics and whole nodes shutting down and stuff like that. So like you said, it'll be great to see it in production and see what happens. But it's sort of scaring me that we're going backwards back into Windows NT4. And I hope that's not the case.
I mean, if you look at the CVEs for these models, right, with the Envoy proxy at the layer 7 level, the list of CVEs is quite a lot, right? But if you look at the top 10 CVEs, right, for the kernel level, right, for these eBPF programs, it's a lot lower, right, the probability and the vulnerabilities that are being exposed. In fact, if at all your applications are vulnerable, it's going to be at the N7 layer, right? More often than not. So like I said earlier, it's a bit of a trade-off for the more paranoid among us. I will maybe stray away from it, but
it does put it back into the user control or the admin's control, where they can choose perhaps to go for the highest performance possible, which has either the cost benefit that you don't have to run as many nodes, or has the performance benefit of you get more with the same number of nodes. Or they want the, let's call it reliability of not having that stuff. And it's a feature they can disable, right? Or that they have at the moment, because it's still an alpha, I think, or that it needs to be manually enabled. It's not on by default.
True. And that's a good point you make. And I think I should clarify by saying that Istio is by no means saying, and Solo.io is by no means saying that that sidecars are a thing of the past. In fact, if you look at the ambient mesh, it's flexible enough to work with sidecars, so you can actually get the best of both worlds, right? So you have the modularity because what the ambient mesh offer essentially does is it segregates the L4 and the L7 layers of responsibility that the service mesh has. So you can get all the benefits of the L4, and then you can use sidecars for some of your workloads. You have the flexibility of choice, right? And if you ask me, in my personal opinion, I think sidecars are still going to be used in the future. In fact, I think the progression forward is not moving away from sidecars, but rather optimizing the sidecars so that, and the proxy so that they are super lightweight and very efficient, right? I think that's the way forward for the community.
I think the next thing you mentioned before the podcast, before we started recording, assuming we're done with the Istio topic.
Yes.
Was Gamma Initiative. Cool name. No idea what that is.
Cooler than it sounds. I mean, depending on what you're into. So the Gamma Initiative is essentially I'd like to call it an evolution of the Gateway API. So Gamma stands for Gateway API Mesh Management and Administration. So Gateway API, for those who don't know, is the evolution of Kubernetes Ingress, right? So it evolves from the traditional Ingress model, which is basically a usage model. And it transitions into a role-based model, which is actually super relevant, especially nowadays. So I think the community has realized that in reality, infrastructure is generally shared. It's meant to be shared. And it's only right that people who are consuming these resources don't have to all rely on the same block of cheese, right? So they can actually have role-based access for the various resources that are made available by the API. So you have your gateway clause, which is something that the infrastructure provider is responsible for. So either GCP, AWS, Azure, these are just some examples from the top of my head. Then you have the gateway class, sorry, then you have the gateway resource itself. And that's something that the cluster operator takes care of. The cluster operator or the cluster admin, generally the person responsible for the infrastructure side of things. And then you have the routes, which consume the gateway resources. And these routes are generally done by developers, right? So people who all they want to do is get their applications up and running, serve it to their users, serve it to their customers or consumers. And before this, all of these different roles were done by a singular person, right? Whether or not your organization had those hierarchies, a single person had to be responsible for all of those things, right? That's just the way it was built. It was designed. But I think there was a realization that it's better to go for a role-based mode. And therefore, that's where the Gateway API came from. Now, the Gateway API primarily takes care of north-south traffic, right? So north-south is outside your cluster to inside your cluster. The Gamma initiative, I think their basic design model is that just like we do in north and south, how about we do east and west as well? That means communication between services within the cluster. So I think they're trying to do this with minimal changes. And I think like the way the Gateway API was also set up, it allows them to do this without that many changes, right? So that's what the Gamma initiative is all about. Again, this was introduced, I think, last year or the year, maybe the year before that, I'm not entirely sure. So they're looking for large open source contributions for people to help build this up. I attended one of the talks and they primarily spoke about conformance with respect to the Gamma model, right? So conformance in the sense that you have your core feature set, which is meant to be portable and universally accessible by anyone who's using these APIs. Then you have the extended feature set, which are a little more customized, might not be available for everyone. It's still portable, but might not be available for everyone. And then you have implementation specific features, which are generally vendor specific, right? So I think the session I attended was quite useful. We get to see you can basically generate conformance reports on your clusters now that can show you these XYZ features that you're using are compatible, they work. These features might not work, probably won't work. I think that's going to be very useful as we start seeing people use these APIs more and more. As we see people transitioning away from Ingress and towards Gateway APIs, I think this is going to be super helpful along the journey.
You said it might be controversial, but this last topic, or it might be the last topic, I don't know if there is more, but was there a talk on this, or did you just see this at a booth, Kubernetes GPT?
I think there was both a talk on it, but I didn't get to see the talk, but I did check out the booth, and it piqued my interest. I did some research on them as well later on. So K8's GPT. I was interested in them specifically because this is something that I've been thinking of for a while now, right? Because as part of my job at least, a lot of times we have to troubleshoot Kubernetes clusters, and it feels like it always felt like sometimes sometimes the problems are very unique and very difficult, and a lot of the times the problems are repeatable, reproducible. You've heard it once, you've heard it 1,000 times. And I think an easier way for us to evolve and meet this issue would be if we had an AI, right? Because I don't think you need a Kubernetes specialist to solve every Kubernetes issue that you have. A lot of them are quite straightforward, right? Some of them not. Some of them are more complex than the others. But what if you had an AI that could not only troubleshoot for you, right, but has access to a repository of a whole host of pre-existing issues. So unless it's a brand new issue, right, a brand new problem that no one has ever had before, which is very unlikely, but it's impossible. So unless it's that kind of problem, it's very likely that an AI will be able to help you out with that, right, and give you a very straightforward response, and maybe in the future even apply the remediation for you. K8's GPT is not exactly that, right? It's primarily meant for analyzing and troubleshooting problems within your cluster. It doesn't have its own AI as such. It integrates with existing AIs. So by default, when you use it, it actually uses OpenAI in the backend. So it integrates, it communicates with OpenAI and gives you your results based on that. But it also integrates with a lot of other AIs, right? So SageMaker, Bedrock, Google's Gemini, I think even Vertex AI. So you can integrate this with other models. And if I'm not mistaken, I think you can even integrate it with a locally deployed model, maybe like a custom model. So there's a lot of potential there, right? And all of this can be done through CLI, right? They have their CLI tool, which you can type K8's GPT, analyze something, and it gives you the full response, right? In JSON or whatever format you want. So I found it very interesting, and I'd love to see like the progression of this, right? Because right now you still need to use OpenAI, so you need to get an API key from OpenAI. I wonder how they're going to evolve this technology, because I think it's definitely something that people want, something that people would love to use. I'm just curious about what the evolution is going to be like for this particular product.
I imagine you and your team would also maybe like the customers that you help to deal with the low-hanging fruit themselves and allowing you to do more or help them with the more complex issues and implementations. This sounds like a Devin, but for Kubernetes. Or
yes.
Or do we not talk about Devin anymore? Is Devin old news?
No, that's a good point. That's a decent way of thinking about it. And yes, that's I would like to see that, right? I would like to see me and my team focus on genuinely complex cases that require the extent of our bandwidth, right? You wouldn't use you know, a super intelligent AI robot to hammer a nail, right? You'd probably just get something simpler for that. So not that I'm comparing myself to a super intelligent AI robot by any means. What I'm trying to say is that it would definitely be super useful for any consumer of these kind of products to be able to troubleshoot simple issues very quickly. For example, right, if you have a production issue, your services are down and you need support immediately, right? It's no matter how good we are at do it, right, with our response times, always quicker to just type something on your CLI and get an immediate response from the API that shows you here's the answer, here's how you fix it, right? So I do think that this is going to be useful. It might already be, it's probably useful now and going to be more useful in the future.
I mean, it's a sort of system from a brief read of it that even if you don't find the actual issue, it's going to give you a level of confidence to know that you've checked the basics first, right? The number of times, and I think anybody that's ever worked providing support to users or to other companies has had that experience of doing the same thing over and over again, because problems will manifest differently for different customers and different configurations, but it will always be the network or the DNS, right? It's always, you know, obviously I'm simplifying, but it always comes back to similar things that you've maybe solved before, seen before. And if you can use a tool to rule those basics out or help point you in the right direction, ideally collect some log files and give you some details to help the people that are troubleshooting and helping you with the problem, then that's obviously going to make things better. And if we can take that idea of training a model on it and teach it to do other products as well,
absolutely.
And maybe we could have that, my dream of AI replacing myself in my job and just sitting here and letting the computer do all the work.
Well, I heard someone say that AI doesn't replace jobs; it'll replace tasks. They were making an argument that AI is not going to take. He was making, like, I'm willing to wager $5,000 to anyone that, you know, not more than 10% of information service jobs. I forget what industry he cited, but like, will be replaced by AI. And he made the case that AI replaced tasks, not jobs. So,
Excuse me for a second. I'm going to switch on the light. Getting a little dark.
No worries. Yeah, I was going to make a witness protection joke with you. You ruined my setup. I was gonna say, like, sounds like we need to wrap up. Alfred's got into witness protection.
Well, I think I've spoken too much about Istio. Maybe that's why.
No. Well, I think we can keep that part in. But that was funny. Are there any other topics that you wanted to discuss based on what you saw session wise or heard announced before we wrap up?
To be honest, I would have liked to see a little more flashiness from the event in the sense that, if you think about what happened last year and the years before that, every event is always new product announcements, new feature releases, brand new stuff that's going to be potentially revolutionary. But there wasn't that much of it this time, right? There were still a lot of good updates and events, right? But I didn't really find anything that made me think, whoa, that's going to be groundbreaking. That's especially disappointing because, we're at this age in technology where almost any event you go to, they're talking about some new AI updates, some new AI enhancement. Right? And I think there were a few talks about AI integrating with Kubernetes, but I want to see a bit more on that, right? I want to see that. I want people to spend a little bit more time on that, right? So I'm thinking about, having an AI control the entire Kubernetes control plane, right? Something flashy, something, it might not be working, it might work, might not work, but something that's going to be potentially revolutionary for the industry, right? I would love to see something like that. Maybe it didn't happen this time. Maybe it did. Maybe I missed the session, right? That's also possible. But if it doesn't happen this year, then I'm expecting it to happen in the coming years, at least.
Nice way to wrap it up. Thanks. Thanks, Alfred, for joining us. Thanks for listening. And let us know in the comments, or you can angrily email myself or Alfred if you disagree with anything that he mentioned. We like conversation. And we'll see you at the next episode.
Thanks, all.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Cloud Masters, a Doit Multimedia production. Our hosts are Matan Bordo, Product Marketing Manager at Doit, and Sam Clark, a Technical Account Manager at Doit. Our guest today was Alfred Tommy, Cloud Architect and GKE Specialist here at Doit. Production and editing are handled by me, Crispin Stanbeck, Multimedia Content Producer at Doit. To hear more episodes and learn how Doit helps cloud-driven organizations understand and harness the cloud to drive business growth, visit doit.com.